You're listening to Valley Public Radio. The Fresno Philharmonic's Pop Series continues tomorrow night with a special performance at the Sheroyan Theater that focuses on the ever-popular multi-generational music of Louis Armstrong. The jazz trumpeter was not only a great icon in jazz circles, but also crossed over into the pop world, and his legacy lives on in this concert. It features acclaimed trumpeter and vocalist Byron Stripling, as well as Chelsea Tipton, the guest conductor with the orchestra in this concert, and they both join us now in our studio. Byron and Chelsea, welcome.
Hey, it's good to see you.
Good to be with you, man. Thanks for having us.
So let's start out with you, Byron. Louis Armstrong's music, there's so many facets to it over the years. What's most remarkable to you looking back at his career as a huge jazz innovator and also in so many other ways, from his instrumental work to his vocal stylings and beyond? What stands out the most to you?
Well, I think all of that's important. One thing we could point to right away is the longevity. I think that, you know, when we talk with young people, they always want to be, what's the new latest thing? And it's interesting because I always let them know that if you haven't heard a particular kind of music, it's new to you. And what happens with Louis Armstrong's music, it's always continues to be reintroduced to everybody, and it's always fresh when they feel it and when they hear it. And what they're hearing is the sound of New Orleans, from the collard greens, cornbread, buttermilk, chitlins, candied yams, crawfish, etouffee, and the shrimp gumbo, from all the great classical music that was in New Orleans during that period, the brass bands like the Onward and the Olympia brass bands, the music from the nightclubs, you know, because we know that jazz was born in these little nightclubs. Some people call them full-service entertainment centers. Well, that's where jazz was born, and that's where jazz got its negative reputation. But Louis Armstrong had all those sounds of New Orleans in his ear and in his horn, and they came out. And when this came out, it was a different sound than America had ever heard. It was a culmination of all those influences wrapped into one. And that spirit of what he produced as a musician produced really who he was as a person. He said, I'm here in the cause of happiness. And so I think what people continue to, and that's where the longevity comes in, continue to respond to, whether it's the old or young people, is that the feeling that they get, the spirit of his music, which is the sound of New Orleans, which is the sound of America. And the moment that you hear his golden trumpet or you hear the sound of his gravelly voice, you're immediately transported to a better place.
Now, as a young man growing up in Atlanta, how did you come to be exposed to his music? You grew up in and were a young man in the 1980s when there was sort of this resurgence in traditional jazz forms that maybe had been overlooked for a few decades. How did you initially get into his style?
Well, you know, music was an integral part of my family's life. We knew that music, it was good for us. It was our Valium. It was our Xanax. It was our antidepressant drug, and there was no side effects with the music. So my father had great classical music. He was a classical singer. I heard great classical music all the time. When he finished work and came home, he liked to listen to Miles Davis and Clifford Brown and Duke Ellington and Count Basie. And one of the people he also loved, in addition to go to the Jackson 5 and the Temptations and the OJs and the Four Tops and all that. But he loved Miles and Dizzy and all this great jazz. So I heard Louis Armstrong among that. He had the great album of Louis Armstrong. And that's where his music hit me almost like a virus that went through my body for which there was no cure. So it was hearing it from my father and my parents. And also, I must say, live music was important to our parents. My parents were teachers, you know, very modest means. But to go to concerts, so I heard Beverly Sills, I heard Leontine Price, I heard the Minnesota Orchestra, I heard the Chicago Symphony. And all that was all my parents finding a ticket up in the balcony for me and my brother and my mother and my father to go to a concert. And we would always, you know, if Chelsea and I do what we're supposed to do tomorrow, and if musicians do their work, then people will leave the hall and they will feel better. They won't know why, and they shouldn't know why, and we won't know why. But there's a spiritual thing that this music, that the Fresno Symphony does, that can move people. It's food for the soul and provides valuable nourishment for the community. And so if we, Chelsea and I, get our stuff together and the orchestras, they're there. It's just up for us to shape and mold and sculpt them. Then the experience that they have, they're going to leave better. That's the power of classical music, of jazz, of any great music.
So tell me what it's like being a soloist, whether as a vocalist or an instrumentalist, in the context of playing in a jazz group versus with a symphony and a conductor here like you have with Chelsea. All those musicians you mentioned, from Clifford Brown to Miles, Dizzy, they all at some point had that desire to work with a huge orchestra. And Louis Armstrong himself as well. Jazz has a rich history with that, with strings. What is that experience like, being the soloist out in front of this huge ensemble?
Sure. Well, for me, one of the most important things in doing what you're just talking about is that the strings aren't, we don't put them to the side and say, hey, you guys are just playing whole notes. We call them footballs.
Yes.
and music. I want them integrated with us. So we have music and arrangements that are written where there's some hard parts.
And, you know, in doing these Pops concerts, I have worked with artists and I've worked with arrangers who the orchestra is more like a shadow. And that's not much fun. There's not much interaction. And so when I started working with Byron, I was pleased to see the arrangers that he worked with, and the arrangements that we were able to use, they really show the orchestra has an integral part to the program. And so, you know, good music is good music. And one of the things that Byron was talking about is whether it's New Orleans, whether it's Beethoven, if it's good music, it tends to stay around for quite a long time. And that's one reason why Louis Armstrong has been around for such a long time.
Speaking of staying power, you two have quite the history together working
yes.
in this context and others. Tell me about how you first came to work together and how this relationship has blossomed.
Well, I met Byron. We went to college together, and I was a clarinet player back then, and I had no interest in conducting. I just went, my goal, my dream was to be the first chair clarinetist of the New York Philharmonic. That was my goal when I got to college. But then as things went on and I started, about my junior year in college, I started getting into conducting. But I met Byron my freshman year, and he was an amazing talent back then, and he went on to great things. And so the great thing about music is how it can bring you back together. And it was some 20 years, I don't know, 20, 25 years later, when I'm conducting and he's done so many things that we were able to work together in various cities. And it's just been a real delight. And you know, like I said, good music is good music. And I think the audience is going to have a really great time. We were on the way over here this afternoon. We were talking about what attracts audiences to people, to arts organizations, and we were talking about melody. And one of the great things, and I was just talking to Byron about, I've got one of the Mac the Knife going in my head right now. Once it gets in there, and once you connect with that, it stays with you. And that's one of the things that I think that people are going to really enjoy. They're going to come out of the concert tomorrow night singing a tune. Mm-hmm. I guarantee it. Absolutely guarantee it. I'll put some money down on it.
Again, if you just joined us on Valley Public Radio, that guest you hear is conductor Chelsea Tipton, also with Byron Stripling here today. He is a trumpet soloist and vocalist performing with the Fresno Philharmonic in a Pops concert that is tomorrow night at the Soroyan Theater in Fresno. Byron, I want to ask you about the vocal side of your work. How did you get into that side of your artistry? Was that something that came later? Was it trumpet first and then vocals? Or was that something you always had just in your arsenal of things that you can do at a gig?
Well, so I mentioned my father, and he was the choir director at our church. If you're a choir director's son, you're
going to sing.
You're going to
sing.
Chelsea.
Yeah.
It was really, in my household, there was really no question, you know, what. And not only are you going to be in the choir, but you have to sing whatever he needs that day. So if the altos need a little help, I'm going to sing alto. And I never had to do soprano, but tenor and bass, I did a lot of both. So I never actually knew what my vocal range was because I was singing whatever I needed to sing. So that's your answer. But For me, that was a valuable experience. I mean, church is a great place to learn music because people are so forgiving and, and loving, you know.
Yes, yes. Honey, you sure did sound good, you know, showing up.
Right. And that was great for me. The other great thing about that is my father, which basically he would always sing, to have us do like two sort of classical type anthems. And then we do like a Negro spiritual, and then we do some gospel, and we had a Hammond B3 organ player, and so I got to see, and that was real important for him. To sort of, it was almost like a historic thing for the church because they got to witness all the ways that people have worshipped musically. And by the way, any great celebration of any event is always framed with music. That's why I think it's so important to our culture and our society and our history. And that's what Louis Armstrong does for a lot of people. I mean, I always take it back to him because he's so important to me. And that's why we do this concert.
And I just want to add to that, as an instrumentalist, I play clarinet and trumpet. We're always striving to play in a vocal way. We're always trying to sing. You hear the analogy from a teacher. Sing through that. Sing. I'll sing for the orchestra. Play it this way. We're always striving for that. So our model for what we consider musicality is the voice, is being able to sing. And Louis Armstrong sort of, that was born out of Louis Armstrong as well.
Yeah, and aside from his incredible innovations with the trumpet, you know, if you listen to popular vocals before Louis Armstrong and after, there's such a dramatic change there. Do you think today we overlook the influence he had, not just in the, pigeonholing him in the jazz world, but the way he changed popular music in that sense as well?
Yeah, I think we overlook him. I certainly don't, and it's part of my the evangelical preaching of the greatness of Louis Armstrong that I try to carry with me. And, you know, one thing we know that rhythmically, melodically, and harmonically, Louis Armstrong changed it for everybody. But even beyond those, in concept of sound, before Louis Armstrong, people always sang in almost an operatic way. When people sang a song like Stardust, they would go, "Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely night," and just very kind of a pretty, keeping a European concept of sound or tone. So why is it that a guy gets over by going, "Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely nights, whoa, lonely nights, lonely nights." I mean, so he totally, with the sound quality of his voice, was totally different. Now, if you normally had a voice like that, people would say, "Well, look, why don't you sit in the back of the choir?" But Louis Armstrong took his unique gifts and talents and stood front and center. So this is actually a lesson for all of us. With whatever talents that we are given, we actually can exploit them, which is what he did. So Louis Armstrong, people in the early years, even during and after him, like Mahalia Jackson, Ray Charles, people like that, they took a different sound quality and a way of performing music that totally changed everything. And so it's, to your point, good to always look back at the sort of the founders, the innovators of this. And Louis Armstrong stands front and center.
So how do you, as a jazz artist today in the 21st century, go about a project like this? You mentioned the different arrangements that you have. You aren't trying to recreate Louis Armstrong, but certainly you are heavily influenced by him. How do you go about trying to put together a program like this, from the arrangements to your own style, and infuse it with what is Byron Stripling and Chelsea Tipton?
Mm-hmm. Well, so it's always Byron Stripling. It's not a Las Vegas show with me dressed up, doing an impression of Louis Armstrong and waving a handkerchief. If what I do, and I think that actually honors Louis Armstrong more because he was about the individuality. I played with Louis Armstrong's bass player for over 10 years. His name was Arvel Shaw. He had a Louis Armstrong legacy band. And I said, "So, Arvel," he became a great friend, "how should I play?" You know, the first gigs, I was very nervous. He says, "You play the way you play." I said, "When anybody came into Louis' band," he said, "don't try to do what the last guy did. You play you." So I play myself. I sing as myself. But I give a thank you to Louis Armstrong through the music. So, again, not an imitation, but trying to give the spirit of what he was about, the happiness, the joyousness of being in a place like America where he could create his own music and do his own thing, where he didn't have to have a printed piece of music and always adhere to that, that the improvisational spirit was always present in what he did. And that'll be present in our concert. So we've allowed places where I can take off within the structure of the music. We don't copy his exact arrangements. My arrangement of Wonderful World is beautiful. It's a little different than his. Will the people go away with that spirit of Louis Armstrong? That's my challenge. And again, if I do what I'm supposed to do, they'll say, yeah, that was beautiful. That was a guy saying thank you to Louis Armstrong.
You mentioned the joy that is present in his music over the years, and something that we can hear, and also his longevity. Is that really evident in something like It's a Wonderful World, or What a Wonderful World? Very different from the Hot Fives and Sevens and the great Decca recordings of the 30s. In fact, stylistically, very, very different. But are those maybe the common threads that you would see there?
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting you mention all those different things, because every time when Louis Armstrong left New Orleans in the 30s, people said, oh, he sold out. He's in Chicago. He's not playing New Orleans jazz anymore. And then now he's playing a little bit more popular songs back then, songs like I'm Confessing I Love You, Body and Soul, so many others. But he's really sold out. Now he moves on to another point in his career. He starts doing Hello Dolly and Mac the Knife and things. Oh, he's really sold out now. It's not like the artists always have to deal with that. And I think it's a point that we should all just remember, that if you're an artist, you want to move forward, but you'll always be challenged with every step. But as artists, it's important for us to make those forward movements. What a Wonderful World is an interesting case, because it became popular in his death. So he had passed away, and you know, he's recorded this song, What a Wonderful World. These people from the movie Good Morning Vietnam said, hey, let's find a song that can tie all this together. And they found What a Wonderful World. So Louis Armstrong, who passed away in 1971. Here we are in the 80s. I think that's that movie, or late 80s, comes out. And Louis Armstrong gets another hit that goes right to the top of the charts. Even in his death, he gave us a gift. That's the power of Louis Armstrong.
A Wonderful World indeed. Again, Byron Stripling, trumpeter and vocalist, appearing with the Fresno Philharmonic in the Pops series with conductor Chelsea Tipton in a concert that is a tribute to the music and sound of Louis Armstrong. Tomorrow night, 7:30 at the Saroyan Theater. Byron and Chelsea, thank you so much for joining us. We're really looking forward to this concert.
Thank you for having us.
I got one more thing to say.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be great, a great time, and I'm sure everyone is going to walk out smiling, number one, and number two, with one of those melodies in their head.
Absolutely.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.